Guten Morgen, meine Damen und Herren, liebe Freunde. Good morning, dear ladies and gentlemen, dear friends. Welcome to the press conference for the Wizards of Oz 4 Information Freedom Rules. Es wird Sie wundern, warum ich auf Englisch spreche. It might seem a bit strange to you that four German speakers, and now we actually are four German speakers, on this panel of seven people, will be speaking to you in English. There are several reasons for this. Of course, the conference language is English. Then it would be very impolite to our non-German-speaking participants to speak in German. But also, we had requests from your international colleagues whether the press conference will be streamed live. And indeed, there will not be a live stream, but Roland Kubica and the stream team will record the press conference and put it online as soon as possible, and then it's available to the whole world. Aber natürlich sind Sie herzlich eingeladen, Ihre Fragen dann auch auf Deutsch zu stellen, und natürlich gibt es im Anschluss die Gelegenheit für Einzelinterviews oder Gruppeninterviews und dann natürlich auch in Deutsch. It's the fourth time that the Wizards of Oz conference takes place on free software, free content and free infrastructure. Let me begin with an issue that is raised frequently. People look at the program of Oz 4 and see sessions on biotechnology and on music, on the electromagnetic spectrum and on new architectures for file sharing, on Brazil and on copyright law, and they ask themselves what this is all about. And in fact, Oz is neither about biotechnology nor about Brazil, but about information freedom and the emerging rules that make it sustainable. What brings the 85 speakers of Oz 4 from a wide variety of fields together is a common interest in the digital revolution. In exploring its potential for emancipation and autonomy, its potential for creating free culture. Under the three thematic headings, authorship, economy, and rules and tools of freedom, we will debate about how the personal computer and the internet helps empower individuals, communities, organizations, and whole cultures. For example, that of Brazil, where free software and the meta-reciclage movement for recycling hardware alleviates a neo-colonial dependence on corporations from the north. Everything else I have to say has been said already, and you will find it in the materials in your press folder. It is therefore my pleasure to pass the word on to our first speaker, Claudio Prado, who is in charge of digital culture at the Brazilian Ministry of Culture. Please, Claudio.
Thank you. Good morning. I was waiting for questions, not a speech. But the Ministry of Culture of Brazil has been going through a very interesting experiment of working together with civil society and putting a program of allowing people to reach cyberspace as a new local geographical space where sharing and exchanging experiments allows the local concept to be a real, true thing. You don't have to go anymore to any geographical new place to find out what's going on. You can find it out if you're plugged properly through the multimedia possibilities. You can be where you are and be at the center of the world at the same time. That's the first time this happens in history. The cyberspace has changed the geographical notion of the center of the world. And this is a very practical experiment but I will talk in the conference about it, so I don't want to start now. And I think the other thing I want to say is that we are, and I will be proposing here in Berlin, the creation of an international observatory of digital culture in Brazil, because we really believe that we have there the possibility of experimenting the ways in which the 21st century will go about. We don't have in Brazil the weight of the 20th century on our shoulders. We are incompetent as far as the first world is concerned. We are incompetent to become what the first world has become. This is our problem and our asset, because we can then look at the 21st century without the weight that you have to support here in the first world. So we are nearer, as far as I'm concerned, to the 21st century than you are, because we don't have to throw away the bullshit that you've been through in this last century. Employment will not exist in the 21st century as it was in the 20th. Social security will not exist as a result of not having employment. So the 20th century is collapsing. Something else must come instead of all that. And it's a natural thing for us in Brazil. People don't have jobs expectancy. Their expectancy is not to have a job. That's their certainty. And social security, they never heard of it, in fact. So to live without jobs and social security is a natural thing for them. And if you offer them the possibilities of new ways of getting together, they will use this the way they will use it. And our experiment is this, is giving them the tools and see what they do with it. And this has, we have some results that are really amazing in that respect. And this observatory is also a way in which people can see what's going on, but also the observatory would be very important in supporting the whole idea once the government changes or doesn't have this government support anymore. We in government are working towards people having autonomy in digital culture, in technology, in broadband access. Mr. Gilles said the other day that we in government are working with the hope of not needing governments anymore. This is a weird thing for a Minister of State to say, but he has said it. And we are pointing towards something very new, and the observatory that we are launching here is a very important aspect of having that experiment flowing and going ahead, even when it might not have support from government. And I will be answering any questions you might have. Thank you very much.
Of course, there will be opportunities for questions after this first round of brief statements here from us in front. Claudio will be speaking on the closing panel on Saturday night. The next speaker is Sandra Brehman, who is a professor of communication science at the University of Wisconsin and will be speaking at the session on open source biotechnology.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. Biotechnology is on the program because biotechnology is very like digital technologies in the ways that it offers new opportunities for using information to deal with each other socially, to deal with the material world, to deal with the natural world. There are many forces supporting the openness movement at this point, but there are also many threats to it. An example of those is that it's possible to use openly available information in ways that those who produce the information may not have intended, and in fact that would be very counter to the goals of the openness movement. So we are producing information because we want to share knowledge with each other. We want to participate actively in political conversations. We believe in transparency. But the surveillance movement is growing as fast or faster as the openness movement, and the same information that we put out there can also be used by those who want to take that same information and use it to restrict civil liberties and for purposes of repression. We can see an example with the blogosphere. There's a portal called Global Voices, hosted by Harvard Law School, that gathers the best of bloggers from around the world. Heavily edited, so you know when you get there if you're looking for voices from a particular region or information on a particular topic that you've gotten the best of the best. So it's a great service to us as readers. We know we'll see a diversity of views and that we don't have to sift through blogs that may not be as valuable to our interests as some others. On the other hand, that's also an extremely useful way for surveillance organizations to identify those who are opposed to particular governments or opposed to particular policies. And it's a kind of an offering up of identities, of people, and of perspectives that are then being used for surveillance. And surveillance agencies are very conscious of and very attentive to what's going on in the blogosphere for this reason. We have a parallel example in the world of biotechnology. Open access to the human genome has certainly stimulated a lot of wonderfully valuable medical research. At the same time, that information can be used by those who seek to prevent certain individuals with certain genetic imprints, blueprints, from having access to particular kinds of jobs, if there are any, from getting insurance, from all kinds of other things. Like that same information can also be used to develop particular skills and capacities in humans, but those skills and capacities will only be available to those with the most money or those who are correctly placed socially and politically. Some governments in the world right now are placing restrictions on using information to develop humans in certain directions, but other governments are not. The U.S. is much more restrictive, for example, than the Korean government, which is quite encouraging of all of these developments. So in each of these areas, we see that actually the more openness we have, the more vulnerability we have in terms of our human rights and civil liberties. There are other examples of threats to the openness movement. Just to name, I don't have time here to talk about them, but just to name two more. One is that efforts towards openness will actually bring about new modes of closure. We've seen this in the world of what's called post-normal science, or moves towards more openness in deciding about where research funding will go and how the results of research should be used is actually undermining the knowledge production process and stimulating new modes of closure. Secondly, we're seeing the use of information that is out there to identify new modes of political activity or political thought even that may be worth attending to, paying attention to by those who would like to see certain governmental policies remain in place. There's a movement now, for example, to look at how to protect ourselves against what are called inference attacks. Inference is how we infer, how we use logic to reach new conclusions on the basis of information that we have. And they're working now on trying to figure out how to stop us from reaching conclusions that are politically unacceptable on the basis of information to which we legally have the right of access. In my view, that's the most important political battle we will face in the 21st century. So all of these kinds of threats do not mean that we should not be promoting and supporting and encouraging and taking part in the openness movement, but I do believe that understanding the threats to openness and the threats that openness may bring to us, to those same goals of promoting democracy and enhancing civil liberties and human rights, the more we know about that, the more we will be able to use openness to serve our goals.
Thank you, Sandra. Next is Cornelia Solfrank, cyberfeminist concept artist from Hamburg, who is organizing a one-day workshop on art and copyright that will take place tomorrow here at Tesla, as well as a session on the same subject area on Thursday afternoon. Please, Cornelia.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Yes, as Volker said already, I'm responsible for these two events under the headline Art and Copyright. I'm an artist myself, and I think I really want to stress this because usually if people talk about art and copyright, it's lawyers who talk about this. I think it's necessary now and also interesting what artists have to say or what their interests are in these fields. My own interest was in the beginning just a theoretical interest because copyright law expresses a lot of what society's notion of art is, of authorship is. It's expressed in copyright. So I started from a theoretical point of view, but then I got involved. I had to face actually practical problems as an artist with copyright law. And meanwhile, I can say that it's one of my main concerns of my artistic work, that I really take a copyright as a material, as an issue of my own artistic work. And I think it's important to say that you have this background. So to speak about art and copyright is a really, really complex thing, and usually if you do that in a panel discussion, it necessarily has to stay very much on the surface. It has a history of 250 years, and one could take really very different approaches to this field, and I will not take the approach of talking about the history or the original idea of copyright, which was to create a balance between the wish that the individual creator should be able to make a living of its work, and on the other side you have the society, which has the need or also the wish to get access to these creations. So this was the original idea of copyright, to balance this. And there's a big discussion going on at the moment if this is still the main function of copyright, to actually guarantee that the individual creator can make a living, or if people say that the function has shifted in a completely to a different field, that it's more collecting societies or not collecting societies, but even more the big IP industries that make profit now of copyright. This is not what we are talking about. We are also not talking about this notion of authorship and so on and so forth, which still enforces the idea of the individual author as opposed to the idea of collaboration, for example. So what I decided, what I want to really put the focus on for our panel discussion is the idea of artistic freedom and if and how it is limited through copyright. So it's a completely different angle. And as you all know, there is a lot of different, a lot of artists from all disciplines that work with pre-existing material, artistic techniques like collaging, sampling, remixing, etc. If you do that, you immediately find yourself at least in a legal gray zone. And this is what I thought it would be also interesting to really discuss carefully. So we have on the panel We have an artist, a composer from Berlin, who will show or demonstrate his work, how he deals with music that already exists in a very specific, as I think, creative way. We have a law professor from Belgium who will explain in detail what is possible, what artistic freedom is there, how can it be really, how can it be realized actually, where are the limits. And what will be very interesting is also we have an activist from Canada who started together with other people an initiative called Appropriation Art, where they really try to raise consciousness in that field and create public interest in this field, which is, I think, where artists actually are very much left alone if they get into legal trouble. So that's like the main approach of the panel. That will happen on Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock. And tomorrow we have here in this space a one-day workshop. This is actually a closed workshop, so it's not meant to be, you cannot come as a journalist and just stay with us, but of course if you're interested at the end of the day, we will be able to have some results. The workshop is, there will be about 25 people from different countries, also very different backgrounds, artists, programmers will be there, theoreticians, curators. And what we are going to discuss is we really want to have in-depth exchange of our experiences we had made in the last years in this field, which is called open cultures. We are not very happy with this term, also not with the term free culture, so this is already a starting point that we talk about terminology and to try to define more precisely what is it actually, what are we working on in this field. So we have split a day into different parts. One part will be about the mode of production, the models of authorship we have, we are implementing in practice, and also compare them to the models that are imposed through copyright law. The second part will be on free tools. I think this will be a very interesting and also necessary discussion about what role do the tools play you use for artistic production, and what is their relationship to the aesthetic outcome. Because you have two different fields. You have the art world, where people only talk about the aesthetic outcome, and you have the scene of free software programmers, hackers, etc., artists who work with software, and they are only interested in this formal aspect. You never have a discussion about aesthetic in this field. So we try to bring that together and really ask what is the meaning of these free tools for the aesthetic outcome, actually, if there is any. The third part will be about the practice of open licenses. That means we compare what the experience is of a few years now that we have open licenses in this field, if it changed our way we deal with our work, and if so, in what way. And the fourth part will be about open publishing. It's very specific about tools that are used, like print on demand and stuff like that, always open software. So we also will have at the panel on Thursday afternoon, we have a short summary about the software, the workshop. So you can also, if you're interested about the outcome, you can find out at the panel. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Cornelia. Next one is Ronaldo Lemos. He is the director of the Center for Technology and Society at the Fundação Getúlio Vargas Law School in Rio de Janeiro. He is also the project lead of Creative Commons Brazil and co-founder of OpenBusiness.cc, and he will be chairing the session on business and the commons on Friday. Please, Ronaldo.
Right, okay. Thank you. It's my second time in Berlin. I always get the impression that it's a very sunny city. Both times it
You're was lucky.
Perfect weather. So basically, I'm going to be talking about two things that are very important that are happening in Brazil and in developing countries as a whole. The first thing is a crisis in the way that the traditional media is dealing with access to knowledge. So if you think about the traditional ways people have access to knowledge in the 20th century, all these means are in crisis in the developing world. I mean, for instance, the music industry. If you take the example of the largest Brazilian record label, which is Sony BMG, it's a multinational label. Sony BMG is going to release only approximately 15 CDs of Brazilian music in the year of 2006. So in 1 year, it's releasing like 15 CDs. If you consider, for instance, the problem of books, the number of books being published in Brazil is very low. And you have also a problem with bookstores. Brazil is a country with 186 million people, and it has 1,800 bookstores. So it's like a very small rate of bookstores per population. And finally, if you think, for instance, about like the press as a traditional means for access to knowledge, the Brazilian newspapers' circulation rates are dropping every year. So from 2000 to 2005, the major Brazilian newspaper, which is Folha de São Paulo, is the newspaper of the city of São Paulo, has dropped approximately 30% in its daily circulation rate. So this is what I call a crisis. And of course, you can infer several things from these numbers. One of them is that something is changing. Like the habits of people are changing, and the ways you get access to knowledge is also changing. In my opinion, I'll be speaking about two different things related to these changes and related to what we call open business. The first thing is what I can call like the legal commons models that are being adopted in Brazil. For instance, the Creative Commons licenses have been adopted like massively in Brazil. I think after 3 years, we can realize that really Creative Commons is becoming part of the debate in Brazil. Just today, I was checking like the Boing Boing weblog, and they are giving a very interesting news about a game that was released in Brazil based in Top Trumps. I'm not sure what if you know what Top Trumps is. It's that game that you use with cars and like spaceships or whatever. They describe like these numbers, and you basically beat your competitor by saying, oh, my car goes up to 180 kilometers per hour. And like this just released a Top Trumps game in Brazil based in the Brazilian politicians. This is an election year in Brazil, and it's released in Creative Commons. So basically you can print the cards everywhere and play them everywhere that you would like to. So this demonstrates how Creative Commons is becoming part of the Brazilian imaginary. And also, you have the emergence. This is what I call legal commons. You have the emergence of what I call social commons. And this is very important for the open business way of thinking. In many parts of Brazil and the developing world, intellectual property has never been a factor for developing businesses. It has never played a role in many instances. Some people don't even know what it is. Like lots of people, and businesses have been created out of these environments. So what I call the social commons is an idea that can teach us now in the 21st century ways of conducting businesses in a way that intellectual property might be flexible, or you cannot fear sharing your work. So I think this is the second issue that is important and is taking place in Brazil right now. And I conclude by saying that there is a very vibrant civil society movement in Brazil in support of open culture. We have here like Ricardo Ruiz, Tatiana Wells, Felipe Fonseca. They're responsible for projects like Mimosa and also like meta reciclagem. In Portuguese, we say mimosa. That's why they're laughing. So basically, this is a very vibrant environment in civil society that is helping to change the way we think about not only intellectual property, but about what types of access to knowledge and development that we are looking for in the 21st century. That's it.
Thank you, Ricardo. Next is my colleague from the Wizards of Oz core team and journalist Matthias Spielkamp, who is directing the Show of Free Knowledge, the Show des Freien Wissens, that is embedded in the conference on Saturday afternoon. Please, Matthias.
Yes, hi, very good morning to all of you. I'm a little nervous today, not because of the press conference, but because the show is only 4 days away now. And there's so little time and so much to do, but we hope we get it all together for Saturday, and then we present a format that probably has never been done before worldwide, because it's a free knowledge show, as Volker already said, and it's a show. It's going to be on a stage. It's going to be hosted by a host who's a professional TV host for 20 years. So he's very experienced in presenting ideas, and the idea of this show is free knowledge. And when I think it was Franka Ostertag from Informatics here, and Volker came up with the idea, and Volker asked me, would you like to organize a show of free knowledge? I said, yeah, well, why not? Might be a challenge. I just had no clue what challenge it was. But now I have a better idea. And I can tell you it's going to be very entertaining. And that's what is fun about it. And that's what I think is important and interesting about it, because it's going to be an entertainment show of free knowledge. And how can that work? Because as you heard before, there are several people here who already gave you an indication of how complex this entire issue is, and how are you going to do an entertainment show out of that. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of how we are going to do that. For example, we have a musician from Leipzig who is a Netlabel artist and who's going to do a mix live on stage. And then we'll publish that mix live on stage under CC, under Creative Commons license. And we have Lawrence Lessig there who's going to explain how that works, publishing something under Creative Commons license. So I'd call that a dream team. I don't know about you. And then we also have another musician, and that's also a very good example, because he's a rather famous DJ in Germany. His name is Hi-Fi Brown. I mean, that's his stage name, of course. So he's Hi-Fi Brown, and he did a Nena versus Eminem Bastard Pop remix in Germany. And that became quite popular. The problem with that was it was illegal to distribute it, because the companies never gave their consent to do that. So, of course, he's not going to do a Madonna versus Britney Spears remix on stage, but what he's going to do is he's going to do a Beastie Boys versus the Rapture remix on stage, and that is going to be legal to distribute, because both of these groups made their songs that he's going to use available under Creative Commons remix licenses. So we'll be free to distribute that afterwards. And we'll have a couple of other great things on stage. For example, The Elephant's Dream. I don't know whether you've heard about that. That's a movie that has been done recently. And by now, I think they said they had 500,000 downloads of this movie. It's an animation fantasy movie. They had 500,000 downloads. That was probably 2 months ago. So I don't know whether they're up to 1 million now. And we are going to talk about the business model behind that, and how you can make money with free movies, how you can better your reputation with free movies, and things like that. So this is also going to be pretty entertaining. And then we'll have activists from a free network club that's based in Berlin, Freifunknet, which is one of the biggest and most active ones in the world. And they already installed a new node on a water tower in Kreuzberg. So we'll be able to include the Columbia Halle, where this whole event takes place, in the Freifunknet on Saturday afternoon, live on stage. So I guess you can all have a look at the webpage where you can see lots of more examples of what we are going to do on Saturday. And I'm pretty sure it is going to be entertaining. And we are also trying to make sure that we don't leave out the complexity of this issue. But as I said, it's going to be a show that's geared especially towards people who are not acquainted with the idea of free knowledge, who are very new to this whole field, and which is very important in this context here, it's going to be in German, because this is not going to be a specialist or a specialized event. It's going to be for people who just read about it in the paper, who hear about it on the radio, and they say, well, this is interesting. Let's find out what free knowledge is, and let's go to Columbia Halle on Saturday afternoon and look at that show. It's going to be broadcast on TV in the Berlin area, and we'll also make a streaming version or a download version, we don't know about that yet, available over the internet after the show. It's not going to be live streamed. And we'll probably even put out a DVD. We don't know that yet. And all of this will, of course, be free content. Okay, I think this is all that I'd like to say right now. And I'd like to hand over to Franka Ostertag from Informatics here. And, of course, the show is part of that Informatics here this year. And she will let you know more about the commitment of Informatics here.
Okay, thanks, Matthias. You can shift this. Thanks. Actually, I don't have that much to add to what Matthias already said. I'm the only non-expert on this panel right here. I'm not from informatics. I'm a communication expert. I'm more public relation expert. We are the organizers of something called Informatics Year, which is a science year. It's an initiative of the Federal Ministry of Research and Education, which has employed a public understanding of science and humanities strategy since the year 2000. So this is the 7th science year that the ministry is doing. Last year was Einstein year. Some of you might have noticed that we spent a lot of time trying to explain relativity last year, which was hard. I think informatics might be a little easier, actually, than Albert Einstein. We'll see. And we're very happy that these science years are taking place and that more and more partners are joining us. This year we have 400 partners and I think 370 single events happening in the science year. These science years are aimed at popularizing scientific content and presenting it in different ways than you normally would represent from an academic standpoint. So when we talked about planning the informatics here, it was clear that we had to somehow get the open source community joining us, and it was also a challenge to meet our aims of popularization of science. How does this come together? So what actually happened was that we developed the show, which is, I think, one of the biggest highlights or the big highlights in the informatics year overall, and it's an experiment, so we really don't know whether people are going to understand. I hope I can learn something as well from this show. Hope that all of the younger people in Berlin and Brandenburg will come, because informatics, information science, is a big problem with the next generation. I think only there is hardly anybody wanting to study information science. And I heard from Volker just before we went in here that the free culture and free software scene has even bigger problems getting people to join. So I think we are also joining forces and trying to get young people interested in free knowledge. When looking at the impressive list today of the program, which is unfortunately not yet printed but will be printed, I think tomorrow, I was very amazed at not only the quality of the speakers but also the range of speakers that I hear. This has been mentioned before. It's a cross-disciplinary approach. There are senior officials from national and international administrations to pirates to professors to lawmakers. I think this is a unique thing that's happening, and I'm not sure whether it's worldwide it's unique, but at least for Germany and Europe, I can say that this is quite exceptional. And at the same time, Wizards of Oz is becoming also quite traditional, because I think this is the first time it's happening. So I wish it good luck. In closing, once again, let me say that it was our explicit wish that issues of free culture discussed in a most academic context would open up to a wider audience. So I hope that all of you reporters here write and invite young people and all people interested who are not yet acquainted with what's going on in this sphere to go to the show of Free Knowledge on Saturday. And that was basically it. Thanks.
Thank you, Franka. I'd like to ask you to bear with me for one more minute before we open it up to your questions. I am grateful to acknowledge some of our partners and the sponsors and supporters of Wizards of Oz 4. WAS4 is organized by the VOS e.V. in cooperation with the Working Group for Informatics and Education and Science of Humboldt University, Berlin, as well as with the two Berlin Media Culture Centers, Tesla here and CBase. Tesla is not only hosting today's press conference and Cornelia's workshop that we talked about tomorrow, it also provides a residency to two Brazilian artists and media activists, Tatiana Wells and Ricardo Ruiz. Ronaldo has already mentioned them. They are here, so if you are interested in asking questions to them, they are available for that as well. They will present their ongoing project Mimosa on Saturday afternoon at the Columbia venue. And here at Tesla, of course, at their studio, they're available as well. Tesla will also show two film programs under the title Picturing Free Knowledge on Friday and Saturday evening. Vera Tollmann has curated them. She is also here and also happy to take your questions as well. And also outside in the main hall, there is a preview of that film program that you can look at when you leave the press conference. Also, CBase is hosting a wide range of digital culture communities involved in The Wizards of Oz in a variety of ways. I would just like to point out the Free Wireless community. Its national and international members will be gathering at Rungestraße, where CBase is located, from tomorrow on. Sven Wagner, a key figure in this world of free wireless networking, will not only coordinate three separate networks at the Columbia venues, a regular wireless network, an experimental OLSR network that has actually its origins at the Wizards of Oz 3. It was intended as a temporal experiment, and it's still going and it's still growing. And finally, a Hive network, another ad hoc meshing network with a new architecture. But Sven is also the technical director of Wizards of Oz 4. Oz 4 is supported by the Federal Ministry of Education and Research in the framework of the Year of Informatics. Franka talked about this. The Capital Culture Fund, Hauptstadt Kulturfonds, the Federal Agency for Civic Education, Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung, and the Information Program of the Open Society Institute. We received additional support by Wikimedia Deutschland e.V., so also community organizations that are able to give back to other community projects find the Wizards of Oz so important as a framework for themselves and as an additional platform that they are willing to support us. The consumer movement as well, the Transatlantic Consumer Dialogue, supported by the MacArthur Foundation, is giving us some additional support. And the cultural foundations of the United Kingdom, Canada, and Norway are doing so as well. There are partners and media partners too numerous to mention here. You will find all this information in the press folder that you have received. This is the end of our presentations, and now I would like to pass the word on to you. Please ask your questions. And please say to whom you're addressing the question, and maybe if you like, you could also briefly introduce yourself and say for which medium you're working. That would be very nice. All questions answered. Yes, please.
Yes, my name is Bernhard Haber from the Positive News page in the Zeitschrift Sein. And recently there was this new software released by the name of CyberSky, and it is a kind of a video streaming software that has a peer-to-peer architecture and allows you technically that one computer and one video camera could reach the whole, could reach everybody on the planet without any big server architecture, just using peer-to-peer things. I wanted to ask if you are familiar with this or if this is part of your show also, and how maybe in Brazil these things are discussed, because it could be the beginning of community television done by everybody who has a computer and a video camera.
Are you addressing this to a specific person?
Yes, the first
to Matthias, okay.
The show this business?
Well, the answer will be short and disappointing. No, I personally don't know that, and we are not going to have it in the show, but it sounds very interesting, and I'll look into that. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
And it's free software.
We, of course, I haven't heard about it either, but we are looking into several possibilities of doing local TV. It's a big fight in Brazil, as it is elsewhere. The big streaming, the big broadcast companies don't like very much small, independent, and free TVs as we wish them to be. But we believe each Ponto de Cultura, which is the hotspots where we are setting multimedia kits, have the potential and will eventually become local free radios and local free TVs. There are legal aspects about this whole situation that are very curious. The digital world has appeared, and that's the word I can find, to all of us without going through regulatory process, much before regulations have understood them. If regulators and corporations had understood internet as a possible thing, internet would not exist. And now regulators are running after to regulate something that already exists. The same thing with free software. And that is a kind of invisibility that, of course, now people are more aware, but it has changed. It's now Jerry is chasing Tom. It's the other way around. And you talked about the dangers, and now I have the optimistic view that the system is endangered by a lot of people that were considered before to be irrelevant. And this is a very, very curious situation. So we are looking into streaming TV. Every Ponto de Cultura is a producing studio. In fact, there is a borderline, very curious borderline. There is a very little difference between a radio, a digital radio, and a digital TV. It's almost the same thing. If you're streaming voice, an image is going to go with it, even if it's a still one. So there is not much difference between a TV and radio anymore, as far as the digital world is concerned. So there's a lot of very, very new things going on, and we are very interested in looking into the new, in getting the communities that are thinking on the same issues together and joining efforts in a collaborative process, which is the feature of the 21st century. We're going through an ethical revolution. The digital world is about ethics. Free software is about ethics. Internet is about ethics. It is already an ethical revolution going on. An ethical, not unethical, an ethical revolution going on.
Yes, please.
Heine Banking Freelance. I like your turn on ethics. And so my question to Ronaldo Lemos is, we discussed yesterday around the dropping knowledge thing, the issue of how free, and when you in a sign line say that they are not afraid to share, tell me how you want to communicate to the public something like a 2.5 license, where you still have the problems that they cannot make derivatives, that they cannot use it commercially, and they have to give the Ross and Reiter, give the sources and the origins, so someone is really willing to share it freely on the web for the web, for the world.
Right. So if I understand you right, your question is what's going on in the poor areas where I call the social commons. Is that all right? Because you have two different layers, right? You have the legal commons, who are people who voluntarily take a Creative Commons license and share their work under the Creative Commons terms. That's the legal commons. There's no difficulty in understanding that you can do that. Then you have something else. Then you have like a vibrant cultural production taking place in the Brazilian peripheries, like in the marginalized areas in Brazil, where people are basically creating an autonomous cultural production system that is self-sustaining, in a sense. So you have different musical scenes in different parts of Brazil, for instance. You have the funky carioca taking place in Rio de Janeiro. You have the tecnobrega industry in Belém do Pará. You have like the forró in the Amazon. So different musical centers. Do these people use a Creative Commons license? No, they don't. Because for several reasons. Probably the most important one is because intellectual property is not a daily life concept where these type of musical scenes are being created. Even though technology is a daily concept. So that's what I'm trying to convey here. These margins, cultural production, are using technology intensively in their cultural industries to produce like business models that are quite sophisticated. But the idea of intellectual property is not a common sense idea in these places. So then your question makes sense. How people know that you can actually share, you can recreate, you can create derivative works? This is a practical question. Like, they do that in practice, but they don't have like this theoretical framework of like using a Creative Commons license yet. I believe that in the future that might be useful, especially when the internet becomes like a broadband is widespread in Brazil, then it makes sense to have like a Creative Commons framework. In the way it is right now, like in local arrangements, it doesn't make sense. You don't need to use a Creative Commons license because you don't have intellectual property regime as strong as you have in place, for instance, in other places.
Can I? It was about the cultural heritage of a certain culture, let's say in New Zealand, the Maoris. If that is taken under another label, this deep wisdom of these people marketed them maybe in India, I don't want to give names, or China or wherever, this is a problem of the derivatives.
I see.
New labeling.
But that's a different problem. This is the problem of traditional knowledge. Traditional knowledge is a whole different debate. It has its own problems. It has its own controversies. And how do you protect traditional knowledge is a whole different system. So I'm not sure if we have the time to go into the traditional knowledge problem here. But what I'm trying to say is that there are two different things. The traditional knowledge debate has some overlaps, but it's not the same as the copyright debate that is taking place in this music center. This type of music that I'm talking about is not traditional music. It's like very contemporary, very technology-intensive types of music. It's not the same thing as like the Indian populations, the Indian people music that are being taken away, for instance.
May I just jump in here a bit, though, on the overlap between the two, because this is another area in which biotechnology and digital technologies are coming together. Brazil is a very good example, is perhaps the premier example of a society in which Pharmaceutical companies have certainly been making a lot of money by taking germplasm, by taking the genetic information of the plants and animals, manufacturing very expensive medicines, and then taking those medicines back to Brazil and trying to sell it to people who can't buy it. And Brazil has taken a leadership role internationally in trying to struggle with that. The overlap comes in that at first it was a question of whether or not you had the right to take that germplasm free and say, after all, it's our public heritage, and then sell it back. But after a while, the pharmaceutical companies realized that in order to get access to that genetic information, they had to protect the indigenous cultures. And so there are now international conventions and international laws protecting indigenous cultures when they have utility. The word is actually used. Only those aspects of your tribal culture that have utility for scientists and engineers. And some of the, what I think is worth, from my perspective, emphasizing in that zone of overlap is that many of the legal instruments that are being designed to make it possible to still take advantage of those traditional bodies of knowledge, which themselves are always evolving and not static, are the same tools that then are being applied to the new kinds of cultural content that we're creating. So there is still something to be learned from that overlap.
Yes, I want to add something also. Reinforcing what Ronaldo said, the enforcement of copyright laws in Brazil are very weak, so you can get away with it. You don't have to pay attention to it. But in the Pontos de Cultura, which are about 500 now in every kind of peripheral zones in Brazil, in small towns, in rural areas, in the middle of the jungle, and fishermen villages, and all kinds of places, people are licensing their songs and their videos in the Studio Livre, which is a tool that we provide them for being able to publicize their work under Creative Commons licenses. They've never heard of licensing. They are learning about it as from the Creative Commons perspectives. It's the first time they listen to the issue. They've never heard about copyright of patent, and they couldn't care less, as Ronaldo said. But we are passing to them that they have the right to choose a model of licensing their stuff. If they're going to be musicians or not, that's a second issue. But they are learning how Creative Commons is a way to have them to have their creation protected. And of course, Creative Commons includes all rights reserved and no rights reserved, and a lot of intermediary possibilities. These are small focus of that new knowledge spread out in the middle of nowhere places in Brazil. And this is already something that is changing a lot. This is what I call jumping from the 19th to the 21st century, bypassing copyright, bypassing that concept that is non-existent there and is very existent here.
On the point now, it makes just two things. There's one other thing, it's just like Claudio said, people live without money, like, don't have salary for a year, or don't have insurance for the rest of my life. And it's not that people are starting out to produce content, people have been producing content since years now. So the difference is just, how don't you want to play this music and earn some money for it?
some small money for it, and you can license it free. And then the guy had no other option, like, ah, sounds good. You know, it's like people are not starting to produce content now, and to see how I produce my content to put it free, people keep producing it, and at some point they say, oh, I can make it free. All right.
So this was Ricardo Ruiz. Thank you. Yes, please.
There is, besides this open source and free software, there's also a movement on free money under the name of unconditional basic income or bedingungsloses Grundeinkommen in Germany. And it's quite a huge discussion. But I couldn't see so far give the inventor or the producer the chance to earn money with it. But if everybody has money anyway, there's no need for copyrights.
I think Matthias is the right one to go first, and then, of course, whoever else likes to. And Claudia.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's a little bit, or the question you're asking is aiming at something that's a little disappointing, because we at WASC, we tried to put together a panel on this discussion of unconditional basic income and free knowledge. And it just didn't work out this year, so we'll probably have it next time. We see the same kind of connection that you were just making, and it's obvious that it is there, but I don't think I should go into any details of this discussion, but just to say that we tried to do that, and this time we just weren't able to make it. But we know that it's there, and we'll discuss it in the future.
We'll have more statements, but Claudio was addressed directly. Maybe we'll let him go first.
There is no direct link between that idea and what we are doing, because these ideas are being discussed in a very theoretical level in Brazil, and we heard about them, but there is no practical things. There were some tentative works, but as far as I know, they were not very successful local issues that tried to do something about it. We are, on the other hand, very, very interested in the open business. I think open business is going to be a big success in Brazil very, very soon. People are eager to find out new ways about making a living, and those new possibilities, understanding new technologies, will bring them to very interesting solutions. This is already happening. And of course, the whole money, you know, John Lennon's Imagine is a goal of hippies. I'm a hippie. So there, we are looking into Imagine. But we are interested in finding out if the people that are doing things around these issues, if they don't want to come and try them on there. Because there are plenty of places where there is no money already. So it's easy to come in with some kind of new thoughts, if you don't have to replace money, because that money does not exist. So maybe we can start there, that issues from the scrap, which would be good. So if you have somebody to introduce me to, I would really love to.
And I guess my role here is making the link, so with all due respect, if I can make a link between that and what I'm hearing is going on in Brazil, money is, of course, just one form of capital. And at root, capital is about the ability to make things happen in future. It takes many different forms. We've had three different ways of thinking about what we mean by an information economy. The earliest, and still the most common, just says making informational goods and services. There's more of that than there used to be, and more of that relative to other economic sectors. Very simple, easy to understand, not very useful. A second that came up in the, these came up chronologically. In the 70s, we started saying, this is an information economy because we have commodified forms of information that were never before commodities, whether that was private, what's in our urine, what's in our brains, or public government information bases, those kinds of things. And by the 80s and 90s, we began to say, this is an information economy because the economy operates differently from how it ever operated before. And when we think of money, we're thinking of a short-term exchange. From this view, an information economy, coordination and collaboration are as important, if not more important, for long-term economic success than competition. So the linkage I would make between this kind of movement and what's going on in Brazil is that you've already moved to organizing yourselves in terms of this third view, emphasizing collaboration and coordination as the real processes and interactions that will lead to long-term success. You can even drop out the word economic.
That's the ethical revolution.
And so that in that way, I do think they are linked.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. I just would like to say that I find your question fascinating, and it will give me a lot to think about. And I think this raises several issues of political philosophy, actually. And I will give you an answer, but I don't have the grounds to base it right now. But I actually think that free money is contradictory with free culture. I think it's their opposite. And I'll give you one only example of that, which is the way that movies are financed in Brazil. All the movies that Brazil makes today are financed by the government. So basically, you don't put money out of your pocket to finance movies that sometimes cost $2, $3, $4 million. And the movies, when they are released in the movie theaters, they are already paid for. So all the money that you make is like a profit, in a sense. And never a movie in Brazil has been licensed under a Creative Commons. Never until like 4 days ago, when a movie maker from the Rio de Janeiro, a guy named Bruno Viana, who actually got the money from the government to make his movie. And for the first time, he decided that at the same time that the movie started in the movie theaters, it was also put in the internet for download under a BitTorrent system under a Creative Commons license. So he is the first one, and I'm not sure if I see many others coming after him, but the point is that what he did is even more daring than what Steven Soderbergh did with Bubble. Like, Bubble, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the story, was released like at the same time in DVDs, movie theaters, and for TV. But it was not put online. So this guy from Brazil actually has a feature film. The feature film started in the movie theaters, and in the very same day, it was made available for free online under a Creative Commons license that actually let people remix the film. It allows derivative works. So I think this gives us lots to think about, but I tend to figure that probably there is a contradiction between the free money and the free culture.
A Swiss filmmaker did the same thing, and we had him as a speaker at the Wizards of Oz 3. So release feature film to the movie theaters and onto the internet at the same time. So how to make money with free bits is, of course, one of the core questions that we will be talking about at Wizards of Oz. And as Matthias mentioned, the guaranteed basic income is very much there in the debate, and hopefully it will be featured at the next Wizards of Oz. David.
I'm David from Grazine FV. I would like to ask Ronaldo if you can illustrate us with some example from open business, maybe Benegal or someone else, so people can understand a little bit more about it.
Okay, so about open business. One of the interesting branches of open business is open publishing. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, with academic journals. Because when you think about open business, yeah, it's easy to think about music and maybe movies and other cultural products, but also academic products are very important for the open business idea. I just came from Egypt. There was a conference in Alexandria where like the Arab people got together to discuss the idea of free culture. And it was very interesting to find out that there is a publisher in Cairo called actually Hindawi, where they have like more than 40 academic journals, and they are completely open business. All the academic journals do not live out of a subscription fee, but they are all available online. They are all peer-reviewed, so they are the top academic journals in Egypt. And actually, they make money out of a different system, which is they charge people who want to publish the journal, the papers in the academic journals. So they charge them a rather small fee, but that can be included in the research budget. So it won't be a burden for the research budget. So with this small fee, that allows them to publish all the journals online, and people have access to the journals for free worldwide, and they make money out of it. It's a profitable business model. This is happening in Egypt. Surprisingly, happening in Egypt, because in the United States, the most renowned sciences journal now, which is the PLOS, Public Library of Sciences, is actually using the same model. It's the Wired magazine two months ago had an article about this Public Library of Sciences, and now it's the number one quoted journal in sciences in the world. It's the number one. It was created only 2 years ago, and it's completely open business. And the business model is just the same. They charge $1,500 for every person that wants to publish an article at the PLOS, and then they give the content away for a free. Anyone can quote and reproduce under a Creative Commons license. So I think this is one of the most exciting perspectives for the open business model.
I'm getting signals from the back that we should come to an end. Are there any more questions? A last question? Last chance? That's not the case. Then I would like to thank all the conference speakers. I'm looking forward to three very exciting days with you. I would, again, explicitly like to thank Franka Ostertag and the whole team from the informatics here for the great support that we receive from you. It's great fun working with you. Thank you. To all of our sponsors, all of our supporters, it's very rewarding to see that people come to us and say, what can we do for you? This is a great conference, and we would like to support it. And finally, of course, I would like to thank all of you. That's the end of it. Thank you.